You're listening to Dwelling Place Church Podcast.
Like that. That's like one of those hopes that ain't going to come to pass. Oh. Right? Robin's right there with me. Somebody's got to be in the audience. That's all I got to say. Tell Your Heart to Beat Again by... Yes, Danny something with a G. Gokely? Yeah, that. I'm not going to get it right, so tell your heart to beat again. All right. Hey, listen, when I planned our Chosen Chicks tonight, we haven't done this in a year. It was actually a year ago we did our last Chosen Chicks Christmas. It's been that long. And we didn't plan on not doing it. We just had a really busy year, so it didn't happen. How many have had a really busy year? I'm looking forward to 2017, are you? So when we planned it, I actually planned it kind of on a whim. I had been thinking about it and thought, there's no way we can pull this off. And then good old Shemaine was like, hey, when are you going to do one of those women things? And so we ran with it, and here we are. So it's a good thing, and it's a God thing. But you know, when we started talking about it, the topic came up of dream again, and I thought it was such a perfect topic for some of us who have been through a rough year or just a long year or just one of those years, you know? And you're ready for things to move on and move forward, and whether it's been good and you want it to be better or it hasn't been good and you want it to be better, whatever the situation. So I want to start tonight with Psalms 71:5. It says, "For you are my hope, O Lord God, you are my trust from my youth." And you know, when I started, I started and I thought, well, I don't know where I'm going to go with this, because dreaming is, if you look it up in the Bible, it's really you are dreaming, like you're asleep and you have a dream, and that kind of wasn't where I was going with it. And so I kept working it over and I couldn't figure out what I wanted. And so I went to Jeremiah 29:11. It says, "For I know the thoughts I think towards you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." And you know, the word hope means expectation, wanting of something to happen. And so I sat down and I thought, okay, what's the difference between a hope and a dream? You know, where is it that the hope begins and then it turns into a dream? Or are they the same thing? Or are they completely different? So it kind of took me a while, but those words of hope actually come from a word that means to bind together as a cord, which means that you take something as a hope. I take my hope and I bind it to God's word, and I wrap it together like a cord, and it strengthens it. It makes it stronger. It makes that thing that I'm hoping for that much stronger and that much better when you wrap it together with the thoughts and the plans and all the things that God has before you. When I take what I know is the desire of my heart and the hopes and everything in me, and I connect it with God, it becomes like a cord, and it's strong, and it's stronger, and it gives you strength. And so then I thought, well, how is it that hope is so much different than a dream? And I realized a dream is something you have after you have hope. So you have hope. I hope someday I'm going to get married. I hope someday I'm going to have a kid. I hope someday I'm going to graduate from college. I hope someday I'm going to do this, or I hope I'm going to do that. But a dream is when you see that hope. Whether you're asleep or you're awake, a dream is when you have a hope and then you see it and you go, oh, I dream of the day I'm going to own this house. I dream of the day I'm going to have this job. I dream of the day that my children are going to come back home. I dream of the day, and you see it. It's something that you can grasp in your mind, something that is tangible to you, whereas hope, it can be strengthened and it can be strong, but it's still a hope. It's still something you're wanting, still something you're striving for, but a dream is something you see. A dream is something that you know is there. It's just... You're waiting for it. But a hope is an expectation. You wrap it according to the things of God. And as soon as you do that, he alivens it as a dream and makes it completely different. So how many in here have somebody or something in your life that is a dream interrupted? Where you had a hope and you had a dream and you were heading in that direction and then something happened. You don't may not know what. You may know what it was. Whatever the case, you have something that isn't furthering any further on your dream. So if we turn to 2 Kings chapter 4, we find the story of the Shunammite woman who Elisha came across. And if we're just going to read a few verses here, It says, now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, because she's a Shunammite woman, go figure, where there was a notable woman, and she constrained him to eat some food. And so it was, as often as he passed by, that he turned in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed there for him, and a table, and a chair, and a lampstand, so it will be whenever he comes to us, he can turn in. And let me just stop and say, it was only a woman that would already have the chair, and the lampstand, and the pretty little shams, and all the little stuff that goes, like, it wasn't just like, hey, we should build something. It was like, no, we're going to get a chair, and we're going to make it like this. Like, she had the vision, she had the dream. So she has this dream to do something for God, to do something for the God that Elisha serves. And so it says that one day the prophet comes to town and they've made this room and they've decorated it and they've put the lampstand and they put the chair and the bed and everything situated. And so he stays and he eats food. And so he turns one day to his servant and he says, what is it that I can do for her because she's done so much for me? Tell me something that she needs. Can I go to the king? Can I maybe get favor for her? Is there something that she needs? And the servant comes back and says, no, actually, she doesn't have a son. She has no son by her name. And so it doesn't say that she didn't have kids. It doesn't say that she didn't have a family. It just says she didn't have a son. Now, culturally, back then, you wanted a son. You were a young child, a young girl who dreamed and hoped and dreamed of having a husband and giving him a son. Many sons, you always hear it. Give them many sons because you carry on the name. You have an inheritance. You have something to place what your husband has worked for, what you have lived for. And so this had to be something that was in her that was a dream. And so the servant comes back and says she has kids, but she doesn't have a son. That's the one thing that she wants, but she's not telling anybody. So it says this in 2 Kings 4:16. Then he, Elisha, said to her, about this time next year, you shall embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant. And the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come, of which Elisha had told her. Now think of it. It was something that she had grown up hoping for. Probably something she grew up dreaming for. I want to have a marriage, and I want to have a home, and I want to have a good husband, and I want to serve God, and I want to have children, and I want to give him sons to carry on our family name. But at some point in her life, it says that the husband was too old, and they couldn't have a son, because Elisha says, the husband's too old, you can't have a son, which means she had to have had daughters. So at some point in her life, she laid down this dream that she had probably always wanted as a child. I want this. I can see it. It's tangible. I mean, you got to think back then you get pregnant. It's not like you go in at 12 weeks and get an ultrasound and 19 weeks you go back and is it a boy or girl? Surprise, this is what we're having. You just kind of had to wait for it. Can you imagine every single time? We don't know how many kids she had. Maybe she had 6 kids and maybe every time she hoped and she dreamed this is going to be the day that I'm going to have a son and then it's a girl. And this is going to be the day I'm going to have a son, and then it's a girl. And so there was a point in her life where she doesn't go to the prophet, and she doesn't say, I want a son. She just says, I want to build a home for God. I want to build a place where the man of God can stay. I want God in my home. And so she had put aside this dream and pursued the things of God. And God came and said, I see what you're pursuing. So therefore, I'm going to realive, I'm going to reawaken the dream that was dead, and I'm going to make it come to pass. And so we find in her story that now, 9 months later, a year later, she has a son. She has what she probably never mentioned again to her husband, and here she conceives a son. And I can tell you, even in Isaiah 55:9, it says, for as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Isn't it funny that we can dream the biggest, most outrageous dream possible in our mind, and it doesn't touch what God has for you? Your biggest, wildest dream is nowhere close to anything God has for you. Sometimes I think we dream way over here in a totally different topic, and God's like, no, 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 I've got it all over here, and it's something we never even thought we can adhere to. It's something we never thought we could attain and grab a hold of. We never even put our hope into that dream, even though it totally fits on that dream. I think a lot of times we go about thinking, well, this is just what I'm going to get. I've waited for it. I've asked for it. Gosh, I've really wanted it. I've hoped for it. I don't understand why. And so we live with a settling. We live with a disappointment. And we maybe never talk about it. Maybe. But we kind of put it away. And sometimes it turns into a little bit of bitterness. And it gets a little bit bigger. But we never tell anybody. But we just tell people that we're just a little, we're edgy. We're just tired. That's just my personality. But in reality, it's a disappointment that you have inside yourself because you don't understand why God hasn't come through with this hope and this dream. And you can see it and it's tangible, but where is it? And yet we forget the fact that God comes in such a way that we could never see him coming in that way. You ever had God do something that met your need that you thought, oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming. I had a need. I don't know where. I did not see that coming. We always go, oh, I want a check in the mail. And then God shows up in a completely different way that we didn't even need a check in the mail. We needed a healing, and God shows up in a completely different way than what we had planned. Because that's the God that we serve. He takes our hope and he combines it with our dream and he goes, this is what I have for you. And then sometimes we get tired in the waiting. Go on, must not be God. I don't know where he's at. Gosh, I guess that hope and dream wasn't really true because we don't see how God is coming through. I want to stop here and show a few-minute video, and I know we showed part of it. Some of you are going to recognize the beginning, but Pastor Susan shot a video a couple weeks ago, and we showed part of it on a Sunday morning, but we're going to show a little bit longer today because it fits with exactly what we're doing tonight. So watch this.
The world waits for a miracle. The heart longs for a little bit of hope. Oh, come.
Take a couple minutes here and say, no matter what your circumstances are, God has a dream and a future and a hope planned for you, just uniquely for you. And Christmas is such a good time that we start new beginnings, that Jesus sent Messiah, the Son, the promised child, the hope of Israel and the whole world, that it's such a great time for having new beginnings, for looking ahead to the future. And even though it's not a new year, this is a time of year that we celebrate being able to start again and have a new life. You know, it was over 2,000 years ago, the Jewish people found themselves yet again in bondage, this time to the Roman Empire. It was tough, but I think it was the promises of God and dreaming of a future, of a Messiah that had been promised to them hundreds of years before. Matter of fact, I was doing a little study on it. There's over 300 prophecies that foretold of the coming Messiah, the birth, the life, the resurrection of Jesus. And so even though the Old Testament was finished about 450 BC, for hundreds of years, these Jewish people have been told and promised there's going to come a Messiah. He's going to set his people free. And they had this dream of the future. And, you know, I believe it was this dream that kept them going, that they knew that one day this promised Messiah would come, and they had all these scriptures that they were looking to. He was going to be a Nazarite. He was going to be of the tribe of Judah, of the lineage of David. He was going to be born of a virgin. He was going to be born in Bethlehem. He'd be called a Nazarite. I mean, 300 prophecies were all fulfilled in Jesus. And they saw these coming and they looked and were able to hope again. I think that a lot of us are going through hard circumstances. And we're in the same situation. We look back over these scriptures. It's easy for us to look and say, oh, they all got fulfilled. It's amazing they got fulfilled. But we have promises and scriptures that we're looking to also, that give us a reason to dream and to dream big, that God has awesome things for our future. Many of you know that I'm dealing with stage 4 cancer. It's been quite a 9 months almost. It started in April with surgery. But I went through a whole summer of really gnarly chemotherapy with side effects that were tough. And coming out of that, it put the cancer in into a stable condition. It's not gone or it's not remission as we want it to be, but my hope is still in the Lord. And I'm currently in a clinical trial, been accepted by a drug company that they're trying an immunotherapy on me. Still has its own set of side effects that I'm dealing with, but you know, doctors are great, medicine is good like a merry heart, but my foundation for dreaming again and my foundation for my hope and my future is not in hospitals and doctors, although God will use it. It can only be in the promises of Jesus Christ. And I was thinking back, April 4th, I had a 10-hour surgery, and a couple mornings later, I woke up, and my doctor, the surgeon, was by my bedside, and early, they come out so early in the morning, wanted to talk to me, and he wanted to talk about the cancer and the prognosis and give me some advice. And he started talking about what he thought I should do, and basically said, because your cancer is so bad, you know, I'm recommending maybe you not have any kind of therapy and that you not take chemotherapy and just spend quality time with your family, the time that you have left. And oh my gosh, I could tell where he was going with this, and I stopped him. And I mean, I have hooked up to tubes and machines and drainage things everywhere, and it was terrible. And here he is telling me this, and I said, I just don't want to hear this right now. And he started again. He goes, no, you need to think about this, and you don't have to do all this, and what time you have left. And I said, don't even go there. And I remember picking up the phone. It was on the little tray that was by my bed. And I said, this is not, I remember telling him, this is not God's highest and best. This is not what God has for me, to die like this in cancer. I know that. And so I can't even go there with you. So here's my phone. I dialed Bob and I handed him the phone. And I said, if you have to tell somebody this, you tell my husband. I don't want to hear it. So my poor old doctor, he walked out of my room with the phone to his ear, talking to Bob. I just knew that couldn't be my foundation. I knew that wasn't what God had for me, that God always has highest and best for me. And you know, I'm not the only one going through tough stuff this Christmas. There are those of you out there who also have physical things, or you have family situations, or kids, or jobs, or money, or you know, housing things, whatever it is, things are hard. And a lot of times I wake up in the morning full of fear or worry or anxiety, and I've learned it's like, I cannot do that. This can't be my dream for the day, to walk out in fear. And I've learned that to pray, to quote scriptures, and I think more than anything else, what I want to share is, I make declarations every morning for my day. I dream for my day every single day. And I just wrote down a few I want to remember that I said. I say a lot. Bob's usually up already in his office, and I say them out loud because, you know, again, the doctor didn't think I'd make it till Christmas, and here I am. So I know declarations work. When the Lord was going to make the earth, he didn't just think, I'm going to make man, I'm going to make the horizon and the vegetables and the plants and the animals. He spoke it out. He declared it. And there's something about saying things out loud, dreaming out loud, that really makes a difference. It just puts it out there. And so I'll wake up in the morning and I'll just say to myself, I'm not yelling, but I just say, you know, I declare this is going to be a good day. I declare that the promises of God are mine. I declare I have a hope and a purpose and a destiny. I declare that every hindrance that Satan has brought my way is going to be exposed, and that God's plans for my life are going to be revealed. I declare God's highest and best for my life. I declare that what Satan meant for evil, God is going to use for good. I declare longevity in my life. I declare my faith is going to be stirred. I'm telling you, by the time I laid in bed and declared out loud about 10 different things for my life, for dreaming of the future, I get up different. I get up with hope, and here I am. I'm moving forward with my life. So I would say this to you. Just, you know what? You keep dreaming, because dreaming is your future. And I always tell people this. Don't look back, because you're not going that way.
You know, the story of the Shunammite woman doesn't end there. If you read to the next verse, the very next verse, it says that the boy runs out to his father and says, Daddy, my head. Here's this little boy who's grown, her dream that's grown. Daddy, my head. So what's the dad do, like any other father? go see your mom. Takes the servant, and the servant takes him to his mom, and it says that the boy sat on the mother's lap until noon that day and then died. Sad story, isn't it? She had this dream. She had this hope, and she had this dream, and it didn't come to pass. And then the man of God shows up. She does for the man of God everything she's supposed to do, and the man of God says, oh, your dream is going to come alive. And she has a son. And he grows, and then he dies. And she sits there with her son. I can imagine sitting there with her son, rocking her son, and he dies. Her dream sitting in her lap. And so it says what she does is that she takes the boy up to the room where she had made for the prophet and lays him on the bed and runs out to the husband and says, I need a servant and I need a donkey. Where's the prophet of God? It doesn't say that she tells him, you won't believe our son has died. It doesn't ever say that she told him that the boy is dead. It just says she goes out and says, this is what I need. Where's the man of God? She knew where her hope and where her dream was founded. And she knew she had to go back to that place that she had that dream and she had that hope and it came to pass. And so it says that the husband's like, oh, you don't need that. He'll come around soon enough. Not even realizing the boy is dead. So she gets a donkey, and she gets a servant, and she makes her way as fast as possible, not even stopping, it says, and going straight to the servant and falls at his feet. And he doesn't have to hear anything from her. He knows there's something obviously wrong, and so he goes to his servant, and he says, here, take my rod and my staff and run to the boy. Don't stop. Don't talk to anybody, but go straight to the upper room where the boy lays dead and lay my rod on top of him. So he does that, and he runs, and he goes all the way there and lays his rod on top of the dead boy, and nothing happens. So he goes running back with this rod, goes to Elisha, and now the woman and Elisha are on their way up to the upper room, and it says they get up there, and he sends her out. He sends everybody away, and it says the prophet lays on top of him, hand to hand, foot to foot. Lays on top of the boy, and it says he prays, and then he gets up, and he walks around a little bit more, and he goes back, and he lays on top of the boy, and it says the boy comes back to life. Now, here's my question. What did the rod have to do with it? It didn't work. Why would Elisha, the man of God, send a rod, and it doesn't work? So when I looked it up, if you go back, and you read all the things that a rod did. If you look in Exodus 7:19, the Lord tells Aaron and Moses to take his rod and hold it over the waters. And they're going to turn to blood. It's one of the plagues. Remember that? Takes his rod, holds it out. Exodus 14, God tells Moses to take his rod in his hand and stretch it out over the sea, and it's going to part the Red Seas. And this miracle is going to happen. It's going to be amazing, and it happens. And then it says in Numbers 20, God says to Moses, take this rod and speak to the rock, and water is going to come forth and save all the Israelites. And so this rod was a symbol of the power of God. It was a symbol of authority. And so Elisha said to his servant, take my authority, take my rod, and go, because this is what it does. But then it doesn't work. Even a man who followed every single step didn't realize that sometimes God doesn't always do it the same way. God had something completely different in mind. And so Elisha himself goes and he lays on the boy and he comes back to life. So here's my question. Even back then, even the Jews, they looked for a Messiah. They looked for somebody that would part the Red Sea. And think of all the miracles. He parts the Red Sea with a rod. All the Canaanites, they scatter when they come by. When they come back out of wandering in the desert, Joshua is over him, and he parts the Jordan River. This big miracle happens. They wander for 40 years with the cloud by day and fire by night. They got all these huge miracles. This is the God of miracles. This is the God we serve, all these big miracles. They march around Jericho silent all these days, and the walls fall down. That's a miracle. Think of all the things that happened. Daniel and the lions did. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. All these stories. And these are just the ones that are written about. These are just the ones that we know of. And so people are looking for this God to come. God, when are you going to come and save me? When are you going to come into my situation and do what I know you can do? You're a miracle worker. I have a Red Sea, part it. I have a Jericho, make it fall down. God, where are you? And they wait, and they wait, and they wait, and they keep going on, and they look for the Messiah in all of these huge miracles. And then one day, a little girl is in a stable and has a baby. A baby. Is it a miracle? Is it a miracle? Has a baby. And they're going, where's my Red Sea? And here's this baby. And they wander around. They're in the middle of a horrible king who ends up killing every baby under 2 years old because he hears this God's going to show up and do a miracle. And they miss it because it was so simple and so out of the box, so not what they had planned. This is not what they planned. This is not their Messiah. This can't be. This can't be the Messiah. And God said, no, this is it. Lying in a manger. He's your king. Here he is. And you're looking for a Red Sea. You're looking for a Jericho. You're looking for Daniel in the lion's den. You're looking for this huge explosion. There was no big Facebook announcement. There was no Twitter. There wasn't anything big. There was no explosion. There were no fireworks. None of it. It was a baby. And there was a star, and only some people saw it. Only a few people took notice and went, wow, there's something different. This isn't what I expected, but it's exactly what I needed. And I believe God is that kind of a God. Cute baby, by the way. I'll give her back before she cries. I believe we serve a God of miracles, but I believe the God of miracles is not always the kind of miracles that we look for. That was more than we could have ever hoped for. But when you compare it in the natural with phenomenon, it wasn't a Red Sea, it wasn't a Jericho, it wasn't Daniel in the lion's den, it was a baby. That's what it looks like. But man, when you get down to what it was a baby. He came as a baby. He wasn't even in the box I was putting him in. It wasn't even the miracle I thought. I was thinking in a box, and he's thinking like an apple. Something totally different, something way opposite of what my brain could even wrap around. His thoughts are so much higher than my thoughts. His ways are so much higher than my ways. I could never fathom. I could never put it together. I could never understand it. But when it happens, I know it's God. And I believe some of us here tonight are in that situation. I believe some of you have that situation. You've had a hope and you've had a dream, and maybe it came to pass. And then maybe it died. And I don't mean it had to be a person. Maybe you had a marriage. Maybe you had a kid that's wayward. Maybe your finances. I can tell you we have had the most horrific year of finances. After paying off $50,000 in a tax debt, not because we weren't paying taxes, but because we had medical bills and we had car bills and all these things happened. Everything happened in the same year. And so we got behind $50,000. And on the day that we closed our house, 4 days later, my husband lost his job. And in the natural, I look at it and go, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then we sat down and went, oh my God, had it been 5 days earlier, we wouldn't have had the refi that we needed to pay off our taxes and keep being faithful to what we know we needed to do. We didn't want a forgiveness. We didn't want a lien on our home. We wanted to be faithful because we're faithful with our finances. I didn't understand it. Still don't understand it. My husband has an amazing job now. 3 contracts instead of just one and working on the fourth. But I know the God I serve. It's so out of the box, so above and beyond what we could ever hope for. So if you're dealing here tonight with something that is unimaginable, you can't even see how God could step in. You don't even know where God's going to come in. You don't know if he already has. You're still hoping if he's even aware that you're alive. Anybody have ever felt like that? God, I'm still here. You ain't killed me yet. You tried. I'm still alive. We serve that kind of God. And I want you to know you're not in a hopeless situation. You still have a hope and you still have a dream, and God's ways are still higher than your ways, and his thoughts are still higher than your thoughts. And you're never going to understand how God's going to do it, how he showed up in a baby when we were expecting a huge miracle. And it was a miracle, but not the miracle we thought it was going to be. It was so innocent and so different than anybody could ever think of. Even though it matched all the prophecies and everything that went through, all these prophecies that he fulfilled, and yet the people never sat down and went, yeah, he could come as a virgin. From a virgin mom, he can come as a baby. It said it all. And once it was fulfilled, we went, oh, yeah, it kind of makes sense. But we never thought of it before that. So what's your situation? Where are you at? What are you in the middle of financially or relationally or emotionally or physically? What's your story? Because her story wasn't over. It ended the first time she had the son. And then it started up again, and it really ended. And he died. But the story wasn't over, and it kept moving on. And if you read a couple chapters later, it says that there ended up being a drought in the land years later. And the prophet seeks her out and finds her. Says, where is that woman, that Shunammite woman? Where is she? I need to warn her of the drought. So he runs to her house and says, listen, there's going to be a famine in the land. There's going to be a drought for 2 years. So move out of the land. And at the end of 2 years, come back. So she had a warning, all because she was faithful with what she had, all because she kept moving forward and going, I know who my hope is courted to. I know my hope is grounded in the things of God. God, I don't understand financially, but I know you're my provider. I don't understand physically, but I know you're my healer. I don't understand relationally, but I know you know my heart. So would you bow your head, close your eyes, Lord?